Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Marketing and business building expert Jim Palmer, known internationally as the Newsletter Guru, is a serial entrepreneur, author, speaker, and coach to other entrepreneurs. Jim is the host of Newsletter Guru TV, a weekly web TV show featuring Jim's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice. Check it out today at www.newsletterguru.tv. Please welcome your host of Stick Like Glue Radio, Jim Palmer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more, all great things. I am your host, Jim Palmer. I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. Really excited about this week's show because my special guest expert that I'm going to interview live is a good friend of mine, very successful businessman, Mr. Chuck Troutman. Let me tell you a little bit about Chuck. He is a lifelong entrepreneur and marketer. He has been in the trenches in the business world for over 35 years. He has grown companies to over $25 million in sales, and he was drafted into the consulting world by businesses coveting the depth and breadth of his kind of vast and real-world business experience. Chuck is currently the CEO and founder of the Arizona Marketing Association. He's also author, best-selling author, of the hit book Business Tips from the Trenches, How to Succeed in Business Without an MBA. I also greatly admire and respect Chuck for his service to our country. Chuck was a Marine. And so, Chuck, thank you so much for making time for us and being my special guest today.
Well, you're welcome. I'm excited to be here, Jim.
Excellent. You know, I read your book actually about a month ago. You were kind enough to send me a copy. I did read through it. I loved it. I really like the kind of the flavor of it. It wasn't necessarily all zeroed in on one topic. We really got an idea of who you are and what kind of – I don't want to call it an autobiography per se, but it really had that flavor. We got to know you better, how you became successful, and kind of where it all got started. So what actually caused you to write the book?
I've been trying to get a book out for a few years, and unlike you, I've been successful. You've become prolific here lately, Jim. Congratulations. But I was listening to one of Dan Kennedy's home study courses, The Influential Writing, for the third time, and in there he says, write down, not just have them in your head, but write down 50 stories that you could use to illustrate points. And I thought, well, for once, instead of I'll do what the man says. So I actually wrote them down, and I had well over 100, and as I got through them, I said, wow, I've got a book here. So that's how it came about.
So was it what actually inspired you to write the book?
Well, I think that entrepreneurs are what drive this country and drive this world. We don't get enough credit, particularly in the current political environment, but we have always been the people who make it happen and employ people. And also, I feel for the veterans who are coming back and returning, and they don't know what they want to do, and jobs are tough. And so I kind of wanted to lay out my life and how things happen for a reason and what you can do. So it was inspired by my desire to help entrepreneurs and veterans.
Awesome. You know, this is what I call, Chuck, kind of a big lesson book. As I was saying earlier, it's not a, you know, here's everything you need to know about Twitter or something like that. It's kind of a big, broad lesson book. And it's really filled with stories that, you know, lead to a business or a personal lesson. I think what I got out of it, Chuck, it was really kind of reflective in a way. And one of the things I liked about it is, as you said, there's so many veterans coming home and they don't quite know what to do. And I think whether it's veterans or early or even, you know, some of the kids graduating even high school or college, I don't think we do enough in this country to promote entrepreneurship that there is another way other than putting your resume out there and going to get a job with a salary, you know? So was that kind of a driving force for you?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I do some speaking in the schools on patriotism for the Joe Foss Institute, and in that I always try to give a civics lesson because they don't get that in schools either. So I think having a business flavor taught to children by their parents or by somebody else if their parents aren't entrepreneurs is a wonderful thing to at least let them know what they can do and what path they may choose to follow as opposed to the path laid out for them by their folks.
There's a chapter in your book about the time you spent in the Marine Corps. Tell us briefly about that.
Well, that was a very interesting time. That was the Vietnam era, so, you know, we talk about the draft. Of course, there is no draft now, but we were all going to get drafted sooner or later, so I showed them rather than let them draft me in the Army for 2 years. I was smart and listed in the Marine Corps for four. And I say that with a tongue-in-cheek chuckle because, you know, I wanted to be with the best if I was going to have a chance of getting shot at. But I did have some smarts, so I tested high with the boot camp in San Diego and tested high, so they gave me an avenue that many didn't get, and that was I could go to an aircraft maintenance school, which I went to a Naval Air Station in Millington, Tennessee for that school, and then my next orders were to Vietnam, and so instead of being on the ground with the grunts, as the Marine foot soldiers are called, I was working on airplanes, but I wanted a little more. I just wanted to do something, and there was, in the Air Force, all of the flight crew on a C-130, this was a KC-130 or a tanker, a four-engine turboprop, are all officers. In the Marine Corps, the pilot and co-pilot are officers, and the rest of us are enlisted. So there's a position called the first mechanic, and I went to the flight engineers and said, hey, I want to be a first mech, and they kind of laughed and said, well, you just don't know enough about the airplane, but if you really want to follow that path, you can go study this. And much to their surprise, I did, and 2 months later I passed the test, and I'm flying as the first mech on C-130s. And as I also point out in the book, the government, in their wisdom, when I returned from overseas, instead of sending me to a KC-130 squadron here in the States, they sent me to an A-4 jet squadron at Naval Air Station in Alameda to train reserves. So for so much for all the training and experience I've gotten, but in my life, I say my time in the Marine Corps probably shaped who I am and who I became.
That's awesome. It's C-130, is that gigantic cargo plane, or was that the refueler?
Well, the C-130 is a cargo plane, and not as big as we have today, because these planes were built in the late 50s and early 60s, but it's a four-engine turboprop cargo plane, and then the Marine configuration with KC is we were aerial refuelers, and so if we were going to do nothing but aerial refueling, we would have a big tank, a 25,000-pound tank in the belly of the plane, plus refueled out of our wings. And then most of the time, if we were flying troops or cargo or medevacs or whatever we were flying, and someone needed fuel, we didn't have that tank installed. We just dropped the hoses down and gave them fuel out of our own wing tanks. I've got some great pictures of aerial refueling jets along the way.
I always find that fascinating, not to get off track here, but man, I love watching those shows, how they do that. I mean, talk about, precise, absolute precision to refuel a jet. You know, how fast you going? 400 miles an hour?
Yeah, we'd slow down. We'd cruise at about 350, so we'd be going about 350, and the jet would slow down to about 350, and things were a little different then because of technology, but we would put out this long rubber hose, and it had a basket on the end of it, and it had radioactive isotopes on it so they could be seen at night, and one of my jobs would be to stand back at a rear window of the plane and talk the fighter pilot's probe into that pod, because if he was having difficulty seeing it or we had a little turbulence, I would be talking him into it. Then the second part of that job was, if there ever was a fuel leak, was to tell our pilot we had a fuel leak, and he could make a decision to guillotine that rubber hose so we wouldn't go down in fire if something bad happened. Never had to do that. Did see some fuel leaks, but never had to do the chop job anyway.
Oh, man. So anyway, we could probably go on for an hour about that. Let me get myself refocused here. So, Chuck, how and when did you get into the business world?
Well, I got into the business world. I went to corporate America when I got out of the Marine Corps. I tried to go back to school. It wasn't for me. I was very bored and proved that I could succeed in school. So I went to work in corporate America for the Gage Rubber Company, and I always thought that maybe I was smarter than my customers. And I was in the automotive division, and I was calling on auto parts stores, selling fan belts and radiator hoses and other cooling system products. And my largest customer, a distributor named Pacific Wholesalers, approached me about financing me into an auto parts store in Eugene, and being, no one would know about this, that they would finance me in with the opportunity to buy them back out. And I said, that's great, but I don't have any money. Well, they set it up so for for $5,000, they would supply extra down payment money and secure the bank financing. So now I have an auto parts store, and we quickly tripled the business and profits. It was a sleepy little store in 1976 dollars, doing a little over $30,000 a month, and by the end of the year two, that store was doing $900,000 a year, and had we'd added another store, and we're off and running. I have a story in the book about not let your ego get the best of you, because I thought I had the magic touch, because that second store up in Staten, Oregon also was extremely successful. So bought a store in Salem, Oregon, which never should have purchased, but I thought I could make anything work. So bought this store, and business sucked. It failed. We closed it down, and I was humbled, which was great. It didn't take down the other two stores. It just was a humbling experience, and you know, your ego is a very costly possession. Don't let it take over for you.
No, I learned that all too well. As you know, I've shared my story with you. You know, when I first lost my job 12 years ago, I told my wife, she was a stay-at-home mom with four kids, don't worry, honey, I'll be fielding multiple lucrative offers in a couple of weeks, and that turned into a year. And, you know, I like to say my self-esteem and my confidence was ground up in a powder. And when I started my first business, my first full year in business was revenue-free, as I like to call it. So it is humbling, but, you know, when we learn from our experiences and move forward, it's a good thing.
It is, and we can take that experience and pass it on to others, and at least hopefully they don't make the same mistakes. Hopefully they listen to some of what we say about those things.
Excellent. So we're going to take a very quick, brief time out here. On the other side, I'm going to talk more to Chuck about his experience in acquiring different businesses. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
This episode of Stick Like Glue Radio is brought to you by Jim Palmer's 2013 Ride the Rebound Mastermind and Coaching Program, the place to claim your share of the economic boom or create your own. Join Jim and other successful entrepreneurs for an exciting and profitable journey as you take your business to the next level and beyond. Get all the details now at www.ridetherebound.com. That's www.ridetherebound.com.
All right, we're back. Let's get right back to my interview with author of the hit new book, Business Tips from the Trenches, Mr. Chuck Troutman. Chuck, in the book I read, because the whole auto parts thing was pretty fascinating, and you acquired CarQuest Auto Parts Distribution Center, right? Was that a pretty big deal back
then? What happened there is the people, the Lou Southworth, who was the owner of Pacific Wholesalers, the company that helped me get in the first auto parts store. I mean, it's a long story, which I'll cut short, but it was bumper to bumper a warehouse at the time, and it was in the time of the Jimmy Carter recession and staggering interest rates and the logging economy. Oregon was a very lumber-driven economy at the time, was not good, and his business was failing, and me and another gentleman who worked for him became 50-50 partners, and we went to First Interstate Commercial Corporation, which was an asset-based lender, and they funded a leveraged buyout for us, you know, and we were broke when we did that, but we weren't smart enough to know that, so in spite of that, we succeeded, and then grew that business. It was doing $12 million a year when we acquired it, and when I sold it, it was doing $25 million a year, but along the way, we changed it to a CarQuest distribution center. They like CarQuest and Bumper to Bumper are cooperative buying, advertising, marketing groups, and CarQuest was stronger, and their philosophies of how to run an auto parts distribution company were more in line with mine, so we changed to CarQuest, and it's a great group. When they purchased my company, that put them over the $400 million a year mark in national sales, and now they've acquired more and more, and I understand they're over $2 billion a year in the United States and Canada right now, so good group.
That's awesome. You know, I like that old expression in business, I was too naive to know it couldn't be done, you know. So just plow forward.
Yeah, you just put the blinders on and work, and come out the other side and said, you know, wow, we shouldn't have made it, but look where we are now.
That's exactly right. You know, so you got involved in the golf business, and, you know, what? And I remember reading in the book, you kind of went from zero to $10 million in sales. What lessons can we learn in 2 to 3 minutes on that story?
Well, I got into retail golf equipment business because I didn't think anyone, I sold the other company, I didn't think the stores in Portland, the Nevada Bobs, the Pro Golfs and those were doing a very good job. So I was planning on having two stores, but, you know, you get competitive as entrepreneurs do when you measure things by sales and profits and all of that. So kept looking for opportunities to expand and ended up with six stores, and we were really into multimedia marketing. We talk about that today in the marketing world a lot, but wasn't talked about so much then, but we were tried to show up everywhere. We were in the newspapers. We were on radio. We did list building. I paid my sales staff 25 cents a name to build a list, which we would send a newsletter to, which no one else was doing, and then send at the early time of email. We used Constant Contact and sent that list our specials coming up or invited them to private events or whatever. We did direct mail. We advertised on the side of buses. The funny one, there was a company called Water Closet Media. So in all the sports bars around Portland, there was an international golf ad above the urinals that they placed there. For us, and we had tent sales and balloon sales and Wheel of Fortunes, and then I got involved in a local major for the local pros doing a golf tournament sponsorship, and then we did some stuff on the internet. So it's like we did everything. There's not one thing that allowed us to grow like that. It was many things.
That's awesome. And so what was your first exposure to internet marketing?
Funny story, actually. You remember the days of Overture, and they were the first kind of pay-per-click and company out there, but you could see what everybody else was bidding. And one of my secondary brands was Tour Edge out of Chicago, and they had a driver called Bazooka. So I found that they were paying a nickel a click for Bazooka, so I kind of took all the information off of their site, but of course drove people to my site and bought the Bazooka name for 6 cents. And so anybody looking for bazookas, instead of going to the Tour Edge site, if Tour Edge got the consumer coming there, they would direct them to the golf store closest to where their zip code was. Well, me, when I got Bazooka, they came right to me, and I shipped them their golf clubs no matter where they were out of Portland. And then that was a rogue site. We had to have it be a rogue site because the manufacturer didn't want you advertising product on the internet at that time. And then I had another rogue site, birdieboys.com. A funny story there is as well, we bought display ads in Golf Digest to draw traffic there, and it was a losing proposition. You know, if we'd pay $1,500 to $2,000 for the display ad and we'd sell $5,000 or $6,000 worth of stuff, and of course our margin on that was very low, so we were losing money. So I pulled the plug on it, on the Golf Digest ads, and then the next month, Golf Digest ran a story on the top golf internet sites on the web at that time, and birdieboys.com was in the top five, so I was deluged with orders, even though I didn't have a display ad, so I kind of recovered my money there. But the internet's been around a long time, as you know, and we were probably one of the early people in it on the golf side of things.
You know, it sounds like you have a knack for growing profitable and successful businesses, but I also know you have a chapter in your book on failures. Why did you include that?
Well, I think that anybody, a fledgling entrepreneur, you know, or a veteran coming in to be an entrepreneur, when they say, "Wow, look at these guys, they're in business, that's a wonderful place to be." Well, as you well know, Jim, that to be successful, you got to have some, you don't have to have, hopefully you don't, but you will have some failures along the way, and you can't get discouraged about them. You have to push on. So I wanted the readers to know that, yeah, I've been successful, but I've also got kicked in the teeth like everybody else has several times. But I also think if you don't have some failures, you probably aren't doing enough.
Absolutely. Well said. You know, the fourth book that I wrote, which is almost a year old, actually next week I'm meeting my co-author Martin Howie in L.A., and It's Okay to Be Scared but Never Give Up, and we interviewed not only each other, but nine other successful entrepreneurs about what their biggest challenge was and how they overcome it. And it's some really, I found it very inspiring because everybody struggles. The amount of people who go from, hey, I'm going to open a business and then they're, you know, instant multimillionaires is probably less than you can count on one hand, right? And,
right.
You know, in my own, when I started No Hassle Newsletters, which was my second business, I got into masterminding at the time, and someone gave me the idea to start this company that would work with local printers, and so, you know, kind of a done-for-you business. And I actually got a partner with it, and we invested money. We set up all these systems, and long story short, it did not work, and we each lost about 20 grand in a year, which even at that time was 20 grand might as well have been 200 grand because I was, you know, just still bootstrapping. And we didn't look back, and we're still friends today because we put everything into place to, if it didn't happen, you know, what would we do and things like that. But, you know, if you're worried about failing or making mistakes or, you know, making bad calls, you should not be an entrepreneur. But if you're strong enough to learn from those lessons, then dive right in. So, you know, I appreciated that chapter in your book.
Yeah, it's really important. I think that as you did, also you have a failure, but you don't give up. And then as you come out of that failure, you have more confidence that you can overcome other things. And with confidence, of course, comes success.
You know, Chuck, I told you the story earlier. It took me 12 months to get my first new client. And, you know, I was talking to my group, my mastermind group, last week, and I said, could you imagine – there's this great book, 3 Feet from Gold. I'm sure you've heard of it. And it talks about you never know when you could literally be 3 feet from success and not yet know it. Or one sales letter, one connection, one handshake, one phone call from doing something really big. And I said, what if I had quit in 11 months and all those seeds that I've been planting, all those phone calls and people I've been meeting, which, you know, I didn't just get one client in my 12th month. I started getting more after that. So what if I had quit after 11 months? You know, so that whole strategy of just never giving up is really, really important.
You know, you say something in your books, and I've heard you say it when you speak also, about you got some coaching in the early days of your business that you would put forth to the coach that you were going to have X amount of new customers. And he was always saying, well, what would that look like if you put a zero after it?
That has
always stuck with me, because having a vision like that is very helpful in goal setting too.
That was one of my early episodes of Newsletter Guru TV when I started doing that. It was called The Power of Zero. And so I shared earlier how, you know, I was unemployed for over a year and really didn't have a lot of confidence. And when I met, I was very, very blessed to meet this individual. He took me under his wing, very successful business guy. And when he said, so Jim, what are your goals? I said, John, if I could just, you know, do 50,000 in sales, I'd be happy. And he was so pissed off. He's like ready to come across the table at the diner. And he said, what about a half a million, Jim? Could you live on half a million? And I was like, yes, I think so, you know. And he says, here's your problem. You need to think bigger. And he gave me this whole strategy and talked to me about the power of the subconscious mind and how to think bigger, how to ask bigger questions, because asking bigger questions will feed you bigger answers. It will open up your mind to meeting people that may even be in your world or your community, your kind of where you are right now, but you don't know you don't recognize them. It's like when you say, well, I'm finally going to buy a red Corvette, and you don't see them anywhere, but when you say you're going to buy one, now you start noticing them on the street. It's kind of like that. And so when you're open up to say, okay, I don't want 10 clients next year, I want 100, and you start thinking in a much bigger way. So it's a very powerful lesson you reminded me about there. But, you know, actually the strategy that I should really you know, thank you for bringing up is the power of working with a coach and mastermind groups. And I know you run your own groups just like I do.
I think it's the most powerful thing an entrepreneur can do. I've started off being involved in industry-specific groups when I was in the auto parts business, where I was a participant. And that was great because you had other people pushing you to do other things. But the negative part of that, of course, was that we were all drinking the same Kool-Aid, so there was nothing, no real innovations coming out. But I did start doing some of my own industry-specific groups also as a facilitator at that time, and then I moved on and got in a group where it was a wide range of business people, and that really opened my mind, because you know, the old ethically swipe and deploy thing came out there, where people would talk about something going on in the hardware business, and I said, wow, if I do this little tweak, I can make this work in auto parts. Or somebody in a general sporting goods line would talk about selling baseball equipment, and I would think, wow, what a little tweak, what could I do in my golf business? And so from there, I started facilitating other groups like that. And I think that's the real power, is to have, calling them mixed breed mastermind groups, where you get a wide range of experiences across industries to help you propel yourself. The accountability, of course, and the ideas you get. And I always think, and I don't know if you agree with me, Jim, but I always think as a participant in a mastermind group, you get just as much, if not more, by the advice you dispense as you do from advice dispensed to you.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I do something. It sounds like it's not unique, because you do it as well. But I think you and I are actually probably in the minority on this aspect, and that I put in people in my groups of all different levels and experiences. Not only do I mix up industries and business, but so I will have actually some people who are just getting going with some other successful people. I do that for two reasons, Chuck. Number one, I always remember when I got started and I was the newbie, and I learned. So it's sort of from a give back mentality, if you will. But the other reason for that is some of the best ideas that I've received or thoughts were from people who always premise what they're going to say with, I don't really know if this is a good idea or not. And I'm like, okay, I'm listening to this. Because, you know, they're not yet jaded, if you will, from having tried all these different things. And so, yeah, I do a big mix of industries, big mix, you know, male and female industry, and also a big mix of experience levels, because we all can learn something from each other. And again, you know, we reap what we sow, right? So if you're a big giver, then you're going to get anyway. So it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's everybody should be in one. Anyone who's never been in one, I think if they just have to do it once, and they will have a great experience and probably become lifelong believers.
Excellent. Well, this has been an incredibly fast-moving half hour and show, Chuck. I want to thank you, first of all, for being my special guest. Thank you for your service to our country. How can people learn more about you and get your book? And I believe it is in paperback and Kindle, right?
That is correct, and probably the easiest way, instead of even trying to remember the name of the book, is if they would go into Amazon in the search box and go Chuck Trautman, Trautman, and my name will pop up and the book will pop up. And it is Business Tips from the Trenches is the name of the book, but I think just searching Amazon for my name for the author's title will be the most beneficial. I do give a portion of the proceeds to the Semper Fi Foundation. It's an organization like the Wounded Warriors that provides funds for wounded veterans, and even though it's Semper Fi, which is Marines, they do help all branches of services with their giving. And the second thing, my email address is a mouthful, but it's chuck@goldcrownmarketing.com. And if someone would like to contact me, that was great. Or my office number is 480-773-7490. And if they leave a message with my assistant, I will get back to them and see where it will lead us. But thank you very much for having me on. Jim, I enjoy your work and look forward to seeing you soon. And I've had fun with the interview.
My pleasure. I'm glad we connected probably about, at least 4 years ago now. So it's good that we're doing some stuff together. So thank you so much for being my guest, Chuck. I appreciate it.
All right. Good day, Jim. Thanks.
Folks, I hope you enjoyed this very special live episode of Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers. And that means they're going to stay longer, spend more, and refer more. And those are all great things in your business. I am Jim Palmer, your host, and I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. Watch for another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio next week. And until then, keep taking action, keep moving forward, and don't ever, ever, ever give up.
You've been listening to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Stick Like Glue Radio features Jim Palmer's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice for action-oriented entrepreneurs. To make sure you don't miss a single profit-boosting show, subscribe to this podcast at www.getjimpalmer.com. If you know other entrepreneurs looking for the fastest way to higher profits in their business, please tell them about the Stick Like Glue Radio podcast. Now go and implement what you've learned and boost your profits. See you next week for more Stick Like Glue Radio.